Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd, who is growing a beard. Colin, what'd you do when you wake up? I grew a pathetic beard. I was on Instagram once a day. I'm going to get to why Kawhi Leonard is, without any question, the best player in the NBA currently. But first, the noise continues from the woke media. It's really what happens. Mike Sykes, who writes For the Win, which is like an offshoot of USA Today. Jock Vaughn deserves so much more than being an assistant. He deserves a real shot at a head coaching job in the NBA. He proved during his stint as interim coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Vaughn coached the Nets to a 7-3 record, including 5-3 stint with a short roster in the NBA's bubble. And the Nets held their playoff position. Still, somehow it wasn't enough for him to land the job. Yes, this apparently is what a decade of coaching experience gets you in the NBA, a lead assistant job. Tom Ziller says, here's the damning data to me. By my count, there are 9 current NBA coaches who played in the NBA for the same amount of time. 7 of them are white, 2 of them are black. Look, I said this yesterday to Stephen A. Smith. I will say it to some guy named Tom Ziller, who I don't know. I know Stephen A. some. I don't know Mike Sykes at all. It is quite all right. It is absolutely quite all right if you think that the disproportionate number of white to black head coaches is something that needs to evolve and to change. Fine. I'm okay with that. Right? But as I heard Sean Marks say earlier today, none of that actually matters in the context of the Brooklyn Nets job. Right? One, relationships matter. He has a relationship with Kevin Durant, and some sort of relationship with Kyrie Irving, but more importantly, a relationship with Sean Marks. Sean Marks and Jock Vaughn are friends. They worked together and played together in San Antonio. And the only way you're going to get a championship out of the Brooklyn Nets, which is the goal, you don't sign Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant if you're like, we just want to be decent. Right? You only sign those guys. You only sign Kevin Durant to a 4-year deal, the first year of which he's not even going to play, unless you think ultimately we can win a championship. I love Jock Vaughn. He was one of my idols growing up in Southern California. But the idea that because he coached the team well in the bubble and they went 5-3 and Caris LeVert was awesome, that somehow that means he deserves the head coaching job after already having a head coaching job. Like, that's the missing part. The missing part is, he was terrible in Orlando. He was not good. Now, look, some of that is personnel. Remember, he took over a team with an inexperienced GM and a team that was supposed to completely be gutted and start over. They did, and as they started over, they didn't improve at the necessary level, and so he was fired. That happens. Sport is hard. It's really, really hard. But if Jock Vaughn had a great working relationship where Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and DeAndre Jordan thought this was the guy, they wanted to show solidarity towards that guy, they would have gotten on the plane and flown to Orlando, trained with the team, sat with the team, cheered with the team, been a part of the team. I can't explain it any further. And this is the issue that most reasonable people have. Reasonable people have. There are issues with race in our country. They are undeniable. They're historic. They're undeniable. By my estimation, and again, this is a white middle-aged dude, okay, I think there's far less racial issues now than there have ever been. They're just made to be bigger issues because they're on social media. The media picks up on them and blows up a little story into a big story. The perfect example is Charlottesville. The KKK has marched with these little marches all across the country for years. Of course it's disgraceful. Of course it's despicable. There are not good people on that side. But it's made into a big thing because suddenly now we cover it and there's cell phones everywhere and it's on, and you're like, wow, there's this big, and then there was another side and then there's like a riot that ensues. But what I implore writers, reporters, woke media, Stephen A. Smith to do is don't make that your default. Every time a white man is selected instead of a black man, it is not. Race is not the first or even part of the answer, part of the equation. And then there are times that it maybe becomes a factor. Becomes a factor. Because I didn't hear any of you idiots, okay? Any of you. I didn't hear any of you complaining when Derek Fisher got the Knicks job. I didn't hear any of you say, hey, Jason Kidd, he just got done playing with the Knicks. Now he's the head coach of the Nets. Nothing. Isaiah Thomas got a job. He'd never coached a day in his life. The Indiana Pacers. No one said a word. Nothing. And oh yeah, by the way, Steve Kerr got the job. And you can sit here, and by the way, he got the job from Mark Jackson, who got fired. Mark Jackson got that job. He'd never coached a day in his life. Where were you? Where were you? Again, this is, you want to go bigger issue? I agree, Black Lives Matter. But if you wanted me to get behind some movement, protest when black people are killed in inner cities by anybody, a little kid, not just police officers. It's despicable crime against innocent kids. Protest that. They all do, they matter. Hey, it's the exact same thing with the Steven Jackson anti-Semitic comments, right? Like, you can't sit there and go, hey, we're for equality, but the Jews. Well, what? That is not how it works. Congruent arguments, people. So if you have a problem with somebody getting a job because they don't have head coaching experience, why didn't you have a problem when Mark Jackson, Isaiah Thomas, Derek Fisher, Jason Kidd, Doc Rivers got jobs after being great players, savants as players? Where were you? You weren't. Because it's so easy to play the race card. All he got was an assistant job. Do you have any idea how hard it is to get an assistant job? Do you have any clue? Of course you don't. We have more people covering sports that don't know anything about sports. That's why the Stephen A. Smith thing is so embarrassing. It's embarrassing. You work at the very end of the island of Manhattan. You could swim to Brooklyn and go and meet with Sean Marks and ask, why'd you have this? Why'd you make this hire? And he would have told you, because he's from Australia. He would have said, hey, listen, I've known Stephen a long time. I do a very terrible accent. Everybody loves Steve Nash. And oh yeah, by the way, when you look historically, great point guards usually become great coaches. Derek Fisher wasn't really a point guard and he wasn't really a great coach, but there were other factors at play. Anyway, I think Jacques Vaughn's awesome. If he really had the pull of the superstars in order to win in the NBA, relationships matter and respect matters. And if they respected Jacques Vaughn as their head coach in waiting, they would have gotten on the plane. And oh yeah, by the way, you can point to Steve Kerr and go like, oh, well, you know, he got the job. Steve Kerr, up until this year when they had to tank because of injury, if you don't think he's been a better head coach than Mark Jackson, you should ask anybody with a pulse who knows anything about the NBA. He is a spectacular coach. And he does so the exact same way Steve Nash is going to try and do. Where you hire people like a Jacques Vaughn that understand the nuances of coaching and you work on relationships and feel and emotions. Because if you know basketball, being a head coach is not just about taking a whiteboard and drawing up a play at the end of a game. Oftentimes, you have an assistant coach who does that. Being head coach is about relationships with your players, having the respect of your superstars, and subtly finding a way to get them to do something they may be uncomfortable doing, like playing hard on defense, like passing the basketball, like showing up to practice, being a good teammate. If you write an article like this, Mike Sykes, if you write an article where you provide data like Tom Ziller, you should not cover this sport because you clearly don't understand this sport. It is far and away the most progressive and diverse professional sport in the entire world. And you're shadow boxing things that aren't actually attacking you. All right, let me get to this. Man, I got to get to something else because I went off because some bad article was written. All right, here's what I'm going to do. John Middlecoff's joining us next. I'm going to present my case for Kawhi Leonard being the best player in the NBA to Middlecoff, who's an NFL guy, but also a personnel guy and loves hoops, and he's a Warriors fan. All right, so will Adrian Peterson play again in the National Football League? Will Leonard Fournette make any sort of dent in Tampa? Can Cam Newton survive and succeed? Survive and succeed with a lack of weaponry in New England? Going to be hard. Right, I almost feel for Cam Newton. Who's he going to throw to? Find out next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. I have a new all ball to drop that I think I'll drop sometime today. David Nurse, who's the nephew of Nick Nurse, he's actually a mental coach for NBA players, including OG Anunoby, who hit the game-winning shot for the Raptors last night. He's one of my guests. My brother, who recruited Kawhi Leonard at a high school, kind of paints the picture, and it's really remarkable. Later on the show, we'll get to Kawhi Leonard, by my estimation, best player in the NBA, but more impressive is guys that have really improved. It's a lot more like something you see in the NFL than it is something you see in the NBA. Like, most NBA stars are top five, top 10 draft picks. And they were top five, top 10 recruits. It's Steph was not, Clay was not, Kawhi was not, but LeBron was, right? LeBron was. James Harden was a McDonald's All-American. Russell Westbrook improved, although signed by UCLA, but he changed a great deal. Let's bring in John Middlecoff, who three and out is the podcast covering the NFL, covering all football. He also has other podcasts where he covers other stuff. Kawhi Leonard, going from a guy who a Pac-12 school didn't offer to being the best player in the NBA, is there an NFL player who most replicates his ascension?
That's a pretty good question. I was trying to think. When you were listing those names, when I was at Fresno State as a GA, Paul George was there. I think he kind of fits that mold a little bit too. I think you'd probably have to look at some of the mid, second, third round quarterbacks, right? I mean, Drew Brees was a second round pick. Now, part of that was his size.
He was little, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, damn, he's turned into a pretty good player.
You think? It really is remarkable, though, like the quarterbacks. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, one scholarship. Tom Brady, sixth round pick. Drew Brees, little. I mean, I remember they were the late Joe Tiller. That was the first team to run a spread in the Big Ten. They're like, oh, we can throw the football? Like, yeah, you can throw the football. It's allowed.
I think Dak Prescott's a mid-round pick.
He was a runner his first couple years at Mississippi State. You know, like, he wasn't really a thrower.
Yeah, I would say about halfway through his college career, there wouldn't have been a soul that say he'd be, you know, one of the more productive passers in the league. So it just. You're right, and I love Nick Nurse. He kind of reminds me of a football coach, you know, just grinder, came from, you know, the low ranks in basketball. I think there is an element, and you see it with Brad Stevens. I mean, you know this, and the college guys that can develop. Jay Wright's king of this, right, getting lower recruited guys, at least he did up until the last couple of years, that you just, when you can do that at the pro level, where cost matters, and the NBA is a little tricky, right, because you got max contracts. But in football, it's the name of the game. And, you know, look at the best coaches, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, some of their highest-paid guys on their team. You know, Travis Kelce was a third-round pick, right? Michael Thomas was not a top pick. He was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it's not low, but it's not expensive the first couple of years. So when you can develop players at any sport, and in baseball it's huge, in the minor league systems, you see the Dodgers running circles around everyone because their minor league kind of system has been so far ahead of the curve, you have such an advantage. And in football, you know, where you have an unlimited budget, basically like every team has the same amount of money to spend, when you can develop players – because you have the money to keep your good players, it's a massive advantage.
It is. John Middlecoff is our guest. Adrian Peterson gets cut today. I found this to be curious. Ron Rivera said he still has football in him. Okay, so why'd you cut him? Look, guys that are that old, they don't play special teams, right? He's kind of arcane. Like he's just an old-fashioned running back. Do you think he plays more in the NFL?
I think his tape was good enough, and at least the character stuff about him being a team player the last couple of years has been pretty positive. Even this year with Ron, obviously, I think the media sometimes freaks out a little bit about this more than people in the NFL. I think most people in the NFL, of course he got cut. Like, what? They're not really a playoff team. Why wouldn't you want to develop young players? This is year one for Rivera when they're kind of doing a complete reset. Once you're a player of Adrian Peterson, I think it's 5 years into the league and up, and obviously he is, your contract is guaranteed week one. So if you go, well, even if we kept him week one, depending on how the season's going, we want to get younger guys looks, we want the flexibility to move him out. So it makes no sense to keep him, you know, on the original cut. You might as well give him a shot to get, you know, a job right now. But here's the problem. Like, what team is going to take – like, I bet – my guess would be Adrian Peterson is not on a team till after week one because the contract would be guaranteed.
Right, plus you'd probably wait until somebody gets hurt, wouldn't you?
And it was just natural in the NFL at that position, right? Think how many running backs go down. He's the problem, though, is he doesn't catch, and he's not good in pass protection.
He doesn't play special teams, and he wants the football. Outside of that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show?
Yeah, you'd have to look at
He's a volume guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's not one of those, like, just – you can give him, like, five or six touches a game, you know, throw him a couple times. It's not his deal. He needs, like, at minimum, like, 12 carries. You'd probably have to go through all the coaches he's been with in Minnesota to give a couple potential teams down the road, but I'd say I would not expect him to get signed for the next week.
He's Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, exactly. That's a pretty good comp.
He's Carmelo Anthony.
The league changed on him fast.
Yeah, the league does change on you fast. Leonard Fournette. Now, Ronald Jones is apparently going to be their starter. We'll see if they cut Shady McCoy. What impact, if any, does Leonard Fournette? I mean, did rush for 1,000 yards. And here's the shocker. Actually caught 76 balls last year for Jack. That's one of those, like, you're like, hey, what kind of year you had? Like, damn, he caught 76 balls? Holy hell. That one's
which is a good trait. Like, I mean, that's not nothing. I mean, that's, if he can do that, to me, the number one thing I heard, and it was kind of reported the last couple of days, is people
attitude.
Didn't love the guy.
Yeah, attitude.
You know?
Yeah.
They did not like the guy because based on his production, and I know the zone scheme probably not ideal for him, but he's definitely good enough to keep on the rock. They cut him just because of attitude. They wanted to – a little Earl Thomas-like. No one likes you around here. Get out. Now, I didn't love the signing for Tampa. A little arrogant. You know, it's like we got Tom. We got Bruce Arians. Like, we can sign everyone. Like, you guys got a pretty good team. And running back, this is going to be Adrian Peterson's problem. Like, you can just find random guys. Kyle Shanahan made a killing out of it. Bruce Arians is a great offensive coach. And I get he's a big name, and maybe Arians loved him coming out of college. It definitely helps that last year he was productive in the passing game. But I don't know. I don't like they clearly got a pretty good thing going. They got a bunch of high-character guys on that team that are good. Why do you bring that? Why do you even mess with it? Like,
I don't know.
Give Ronald Johnson a couple games. It's not that dire in the sense of now they're – I don't know. I didn't like the signing at all.
John Middlecoff, our guest, 3 and Outs podcast, former NFL scout, and, of course, most notably former GA at Fresno State. That's what's really most – I'm kidding. You draw on that.
Yep.
I love the old GA stories. Okay, Cam Newton's going to be named starter, captain for the Patriots. They cut Mohamed Sanu, and woof. Ooh, I mean, they could have had Emmanuel Sanders, and he goes to San Francisco and is open in the Super Bowl. Now he's obviously with the Saints, but instead they take Mohamed Sanu. That who's he going to throw to? How they're usually not good or great out of the gate, and they play two really tough road games. Granted, no fans in Seattle, in Kansas City, or limited fans in Kansas City. I get that Cam Newton is a starting quarterback, but will he be a successful starting quarterback for the New England Patriots?
Well, I'll start with Belichick and the Sanu deal. Listen, he is not perfect. He makes mistakes like anyone in sports, like anyone in business. He is not. I mean, this was a mistake, but you got to give him credit. He reacts faster when he misses, quicker than anyone in, I'd say, all of sports. He will just cut bait no matter how much he gives up. And clearly, he's just not any good, Mohamed Sanu, for whatever reason. I would say that N'Keal Harry, historically the guys that have success with Cam, because he's not the most accurate passer, are guys with big catching radiuses.
Yep.
And N'Keal Harry is that type player. Now, I really liked him coming out of Arizona State. You know, Brady hated him last year. He missed 8 games with an injury. I'm staying on that bandwagon. Edelman, you know, is that really Cam's type guy? A little, you got to be precise. But Edelman, to me, is just a football player. They will figure it out. The Gunner guy is getting a lot of pub. I mean, 2 years ago, the dude was in, like, Division II playing corner. But it's just kind of New England. I mean, beside Gronk and even Edelman, for a lot of years, they do play with random guys. Jacoby Myers made some plays last year. If Cam is fully healthy and just Belichick and Josh McDaniels kind of with this chip on their shoulder, I'm just fascinated to watch them play and, like, what their offense looks like. Really, for the entire NFL, right? No one really has any clue because of the preseason, some of the wrinkles, but definitely week one. Like, are they going to run some quarterback powers? What are they going to do? Because they're going to do things that they haven't done for the last 20 years. Because Tom, beside Rivers, wouldn't you say, is the slowest guy in the league?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't do rollout passes.
Right. No. Jacoby Brissett, when he spot started, right? They ran triple option. They ran zone read, right? They ran lots of boots. And if you remember back to the Lamar Jackson draft, there was a lot of discussion about did they want to draft Lamar Jackson, develop him, because, you know, Belichick knows
where the league was going.
He knows where the league is going, right? He's not a dummy. These statues back there, those are the wave of the past. It will be fascinating. If you look at teams outside of the Patriots, teams that lose in the Super Bowl fall off the next year, right? I mean, going back to the Carolina Panthers and Jake Delhomme and how bad that was the next year, to the next time the Carolina Panthers went to the Super Bowl and Cam Newton, after that magical season, they were garbage the next season. The Philadelphia Eagles, well, they won the Super Bowl. I mean, you can kind of go through and look at the teams that – Atlanta Falcons, when they lost after having the 28-3 lead. The Niners are a team that we felt like, and they just got so many dudes, but God, they're starting to pile up the injuries here, John.
Yeah, I mean, them and the Eagles got to lead the league in injuries the last couple of years, and the Niners this offseason, it started happening when they went to Nashville early on in Corona, and they had multiple guys go down. I mean, Debo Samuel broke his foot just throwing passes with Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, this happened last year. I mean, the Niners, this is just par for the course, Kyle Shanahan. Every training camp, they lose about 25 players. And beside one guy who has a torn ACL that was going to play, and mix in with the starters in Jalen Hurd, it's not a lock that any of these guys miss week one. Even Debo Samuel, who hasn't had a snap in training camp because of a broken foot, he's probable for next week. So they think they are optimistic that he might practice. Now, we'll see. I'm probably pessimistic on that one. Plus, what's the rush? My one pushback this year, and Kyle Shanahan gets asked about this a lot, just like probably every Super Bowl coach that loses gets asked. If I was him, my response would be like, I can barely remember 2 months ago, let alone 6 months ago. Like, who on this team is thinking about the Super Bowl loss in 2020? I mean, what we've just gone through in 2020 is unprecedented. So I think that actually works to their benefit in the sense of just the craziness of the world right now. Plus, they do have kind of an influx of – they have a star new left tackle in Trent Williams who's never won a damn thing. He doesn't care about that loss. He's going to try to dominate. They have a bunch of – I mean, they have two first-round picks now to this team, and Javon Kinlaw, who from all reports has not been that great. But it's, defensive tackle. It's hard. It takes some time. And Brandon Ayuk, who was dominating and is one of the injured guys, I think pulled his hamstring, probably won't play the first couple weeks. But I do think that new energy, fresh energy, that was always something Belichick was big on, right? Every year, besides like his core guys, there was turnover. There were new additions of hungrier players. And that's just the nature of the NFL. I think the average turnover is like 35-40% just naturally on any team, just the way the salary cap works and cutting guys and draft picks, just the nature of roster turnover. But I really, like, to me, if they were to go 8-8 or 9-7 and miss the playoffs, it would not be because of Super Bowl hangover. Their coach is just too good. To me, it's either injuries or, you know, the new players, especially the new young players, just aren't good enough. I don't think it'll be because they're feeling themselves.
Mike Vrabel says the Titans have an off-route to Jadeveon Clowney. Apparently the Saints are, they don't have a lot of money, but the Saints are like, hey, look, we'll give you an opportunity, much like Teddy Bridgewater. You win big here, you compete, you'll get a big deal elsewhere. What do you think Clowney does?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, just whatever his move was, unless he just, it was all about taking training camp off, was a dumb economic move. I mean, he had multiple offers of like $15, $16 million that he turned down during the summer, and now it looks like the number's going to be closer to like 8 or 10.
Right.
Because these teams just don't have the cash. Now, is it as simple as he just didn't want to play training camp? Like, to me, is he good enough to be, like, $10 million is still a lot of money. I mean, does this guy like football? That's kind of my question now. Like, how much does this guy really like football? Because everyone else that plays football that is given the opportunity is playing football and really has been for the last month. Like, what is this guy doing? Now, I get Vrabel knows him and was around him with the Texans, and he'll definitely help. Like, he's a solid player. But I don't know. I'm not a huge Clowney guy at this point.
No. I'm not either. He's done. Like in real estate, he's basically chasing the market, right? Where you list a house and you're like, that's a $2 million house. And like, yeah, I think it's a 1.5 house. Like, no, it's $2 million. Trust me, $2 million. Look at the pool house, great street, cul-de-sac, great schools. Like, yeah, I don't know. You seem to not be feeling the market. And then the market kind of collapses underneath him. And now he's like, no, how about, okay, 1.5. Like, no, now it's more like, now it's 1.4, 1.3. And then you look at the MLS, you're like, wow, it's been on the market for 200 days. There's got to be a ghost. Somebody was killed in there.
And maybe when the dust settles, one of these teams gets them for like 7.
Yes.
Right? And to me, once you get to that point, listen, he is, to me, he's probably like a $13 million player when you factor in really how good he is on a consistent basis relative to the guys making like 20. He does not play at their level consistently.
Sure.
But if I can get that level of talent, even for – you know, 5 or 6 of my 16 games a year at $7 million. Like, yeah, that's like, to your analogy, getting a home that was listed for 1.4, ultimately paying $820,000 for it. You feel pretty good.
Yeah. You feel really, really, really good about it. Then you find out that there was a mass murder in that home. You're like, wait, what happened?
Clorox for a while.
Yeah. What happened? Okay. I asked guys, every NFL guy, and you and I have talked, I'm taking the Cardinals off the list. Because you're not the only one who said the Cardinals, but said the Cardinals before. Give me a team we should be talking about.
That's a good question. I would say that we don't consistently talk about.
Well, I don't know. Like, yes, I would say that. But I mean, like one of the teams, and I think you and I have discussed whether on air or off air, it does get really murky because the Steelers are a team like I feel like nobody's talking about, and their defense is low. Now that division is a beast. But the division, but their defense is nasty. If I don't know anything about what Ben Roethlisberger will look like, but I got to think they'll be pretty good. But anyway, we don't talk about the Steelers.
To me, they're definitely a team for sure that circled week one. I like them. I think the latest line I saw -4.5 at the Giants. Like they went 8-8 last year with, I mean, historically bad quarterback play for their team,
yes,
right? So,
yes.
Like if Roethlisberger. He doesn't even need to be like top 10 quarterback. He just needs to be functional, like a top 18 guy, and they'll be fine. One team, and we've talked about this, go the other way a little bit. I think everyone I see, the Colts, and you know this guy as well as anybody. Like I just the Rivers I saw last year. I don't know, man. I get they've added Pittman Jr., who you know the head coach loves, and I like that USC too, but. A lot of times the hype on a rookie receiver, like if you have 55 catches as a rookie receiver, you have a really productive year. I think sometimes we talk like these guys are going to hit the ground running to 80, 90 catches. I don't know. In that division, I mean, I think the Texans are still going to be good. I know everyone hates Bill O'Brien, but like I'll be shocked if they don't win 10 games. So the Titans are going to be solid. I mean, clearly Vrabel knows what he's doing. They got a solid team, and if they get Clowney, that'll be a solid addition. I think everyone's putting the Colts in the playoffs, and I'd pump the brakes a little bit. And the one thing, and I don't, it's maybe it's a little hard knock bias, but the Chargers do have a really good roster.
Yeah.
You know, they do have a lot of talent. Now, we'll see in the quarterback play, but...
Quarterback play is not a question to me. They think they've upgraded a quarterback just because, again, mobile and doesn't turn over.
Good in the clips they've shown on the.
Well, I mean more Tyrod Taylor, right? Like he mobile doesn't turn over. But man, losing Derwin James is just a crusher. That's a crusher. It's going to be hot. Golf this weekend? You playing?
Yeah, you know, I might just hang out, watch a little Kentucky Derby, and watch a little Tour Championship on TV, watch some NBA playoffs. Might just be a chill weekend.
All right, might be a chill weekend. Check it out, 3 and Out, the podcast and the Herd Podcast Network. He's a good dude, does a great job. He's John Middlecoff. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks for joining us.
See you, Duggar. Later.
Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Always good to have John Middlecoff on the show, Doug, and we're going to pick up where you guys left off. We're going to do a bit of NFL news here. Who's going to play quarterback for the Bears? No one's quite sure, and apparently we still don't know, even after a quarterback competition in training camp. Bears head coach Matt Nagy was asked about the whole quarterback situation. He said, it's not an easy decision, and it's not clear-cut. Either Mitch Trubisky has gotten dramatically better since last December or January, or they have a bit of an issue on their hands if Nick Foles isn't able to prove that he is clearly better than Mitch Trubisky by this point.
No, I'm going to disagree with you. It's a lot like 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's really hard to beat out an incumbent. Really hard. Now, Foles has played for the quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, and head coach before. So there's a lot of belief there, and there's familiarity, and he knows the offense, right? He knows all of those things. But he hasn't played for the Bears before, and they've only been together a little bit since Zoom meetings, right? My guess is, if I was naming the Bears quarterback, this afternoon's the perfect time. Are you familiar with the News Dump Friday?
Just after or just before 5 p.m. Eastern?
On a holiday weekend. Right? On a holiday weekend. You put some news out there that is bad news or people won't like. And, you know, as Middlecoff pointed out, I forgot, Kentucky Derby, Tour Championship, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, WNBA, NHL playoffs. There's a lot of stuff. Like, nobody's paying attention. The Bears thing will cross the line. And then this is the last weekend of the summer. Everybody's going to a lake, a beach, a pool, or whatever, playing golf, get out of town. It won't even be just like... Collins working Monday, but lots of people aren't working Monday on Labor Day. So I would, today's the day if you want to deliver bad news. I think the bad news to Bears fans will be at least 3-4 games, at least to Mitch Trubisky to see what he can do.
We'll wrap it up with some college football news, Doug. Obviously, a couple of major conferences, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, may be trying to move their season up after they originally have postponed to the spring. But we do know that there will be SEC football this fall, and LSU is taking the extra step to protect their players. They just announced today that in conjunction with a sports technology startup company from Louisiana, the LSU Office of Innovation and Technology Commercialization has filed for a patent on a new helmet to help fight off the coronavirus. They have a battery-powered fan inside of the helmet to increase ventilation to help keep fresh air flowing within the helmet of a player, to also fight off fog within the visor in order to try and keep the airflow moving about inside of the close confines of each player's helmet to make sure that any COVID that may be in close contact with players is not sitting inside of their helmet. So a brand new helmet design from LSU.
I mean, look, that's great. Great. There is one kind of really key point that's interesting is that most doctors and scientists believe it's really hard to catch COVID while you're playing football. Because if you've looked at, like, have you come into contact with anybody who had COVID and had to go get tested?
No, not directly.
Okay,
no.
I did, and I called my doctor immediately, and my doctor was like, were you within 6 feet of them? I said, yes, for 15 minutes or more. I was like, no. You can quarantine, and you can get tested. You're probably good. If you look at the CDC, that's what they said. So in football, you're not within 6 feet now. You are breathing and huffing and puffing and whatever. But I'm not sure that people think you're going to catch the Rona from that. But we'll, hey, anything helps to have football be played. That's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Hey, game-winning shot from the Raptors means it's time for one NBA young star to rise to the occasion. I'll explain next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. Apparently there's a Giannis Pippen debate, which I thought we would go to bed and no one never discussed again, and people are still discussing it. Bruce Feldman's going to join us in 30 minutes. Bruce Feldman writes for The Athletic, has written many a book regarding college football and football in general, but he's our lead side one of our lead sideline analysts for college football. Big Ten and Pac-12 might move up their timeline. Will they play? Larry Scott doing interviews. He was on Dan Patrick earlier today. Yeah, how come they're just now getting testing that apparently is going to be used tonight? It's college football tonight, by the way. So I would offer this up. I think Jason Tatum has a chance to be a star, maybe even superstar. In the moves that have changed the NBA, Danny Ainge had the number one overall pick in the draft. He traded down two spots. The 76ers traded up and drafted Markelle Fultz. How'd that work out? And he selected Jason Tatum. Like, that's a great draft pick. And I'll be honest with you. People in basketball I talk to are like, man, Jason Tatum is great in a workout, can really shoot and score. Don't know about, you know, can he carry a franchise? You know, does he have that dog in him? That's a basketball expression. Does he have that dog in him? And so far, the answer has been, yeah, he's pretty damn good. Now, he got lost in the last play. And what happens is, okay, I want you to try and visualize. If you see the final play, the Celtics are in like a 2-3 zone. And so he's covering kind of like the left quadrant, left wing to corner of the floor. You might also notice that there's actually nobody wearing a Raptor uniform on that area of the floor. So, technically, he's in the right place. Or actually, theoretically, he's in the right place. Technically, he's not. Because even though it's a zone, it's not like the zone that your dad drew up when you were playing YMCA ball. Okay, you sit here, and you sit here, and you stay here, and it's a 2-3 zone. Like, no, basically, you switch and guard anybody in your area. Since there's nobody in his area, he should have moved over some. That would have moved over Daniel Tice, and that would have moved Jaylen Brown over, and maybe Jaylen Brown would have seen OG Anunoby, and he would have gotten a steal or deflected the basketball, and the game would have been over. Fred VanVleet told the media and ran down the hallway saying, they're effed up. Everyone knows in sports, it's really hard. When you have a game won, you get it won. You're going to be up 3-0. There's a TV station in Toronto that ran on the Chiron, ran Raptors trail 3-0. There was 0.5 seconds ago, they went with it on air, which, you know, I'm not sure I really disagree with. It felt like it was over. Like if you were sitting in an arena and you're like, man, I got work tomorrow. I would have grabbed my stuff and say, honey, grab your purse. Let's go. Right? Felt over. Done. Done. Until it wasn't. So if you want to be a superstar, this is a lot like what makes an ace in baseball. People think what makes an ace in baseball is you have a great record, strike out a lot of guys, you got a low ERA. No, what makes an ace in baseball is we dropped 3 in a row. Our bullpen blew one last night. Had a 7-run lead, and our bullpen came and blew up. Now our bullpen is totally taxed tonight, right? It was a turnstile. Justin Verlander, Clayton Kershaw, pick up the ball, and you don't just have to win; you have to be efficient. And I need 8 innings out of you. That's what an ace does, right? That's what an ace does. It's like a quarterback when you're like, ugh, you know, you have the game won, Special teams blows something. Defense blows an assignment. And suddenly now, all right, we got to go down and get a field goal or get a touchdown. You get the anyone can do it when things are right. Maybe not anyone, but any of these good, really good players can do. What can you do when the deck is stacked against you? What can you do when you lose momentum as a team? What can you do then? Just like a closer in base, just like an ace in baseball, Jason Tatum needs to pick up the ball and shut this thing down. I don't know how guys do it. I don't. I would love to tell you, like, well, I know. Like, no, I have no idea. But I'm just telling you, the guys we have seen that are the best of the best of the best, the superstars, like, F it. You know, look, I know we're all feeling bad. We all felt like we gave away a game. We're all mad over a blown assignment. Fine. Give me the ball. I'll give you 40. We'll win the game. We'll be up 3-1. They can do 1-2-3 Cancun. Kawhi Leonard's the best player in the league. I'll prove it to you next in The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.